You're listening to an audio recording of an event hosted by the Korea Economic Institute on Wednesday, December 1st, 2010. The event was co-hosted by the Center for Strategic and International Studies Korea Chair and featured remarks by National Assemblywoman Kyungwon Na. The event was titled Meeting Tomorrow's Challenges on the Korean Peninsula, A Vision for Korea's Foreign Policy, the CORUS FTA, and the US-ROK Alliance.
Good afternoon. Welcome. My name is Abraham Kim. I'm the Vice President for the Korea Economic Institute, and we welcome you. Despite the rain outside, I'm glad it's starting to clear up. I want to welcome you to our joint KEI-CSIS Korea Chair Program, co-hosting National Assemblywoman Na Kyungwon. I'm pleased to share this podium with my dear friend, Victor Cha, the Director for the Korea Chair at CSIS, who will be introducing our guests momentarily. But on behalf of KEI, I want to say we are very honored to have Assemblywoman Na here today. She couldn't have picked a more opportune time to speak here in Washington, D.C. As you know, in the last few weeks, we were encountered with the revelation of North Korea's uranium program, the artillery shelling of Yongpyeong Island, and of course, hopefully today, there might be some kind of announcement regarding the CORUS FTA. By the size of this audience, despite the rain outside, I'm sure you'll agree that today's presentation is not only timely, but very relevant. We look forward to a very rich discussion today with Representative Na. A brief administrative note before we get started here today. Representative Na will be presenting her speech in English, and then during the Q&A session, we'll be doing it in Korean with sequential translation by our interpreters here. Now I turn over the podium to my co-host, Victor Cha, who will introduce Representative Na. Victor.
Thanks, Abe. I too want to thank KEI for hosting this event with us, CSIS. As he said, this could not have been a more opportune time for Congresswoman Na to join us. We just had a lovely lunch with her where we talked about a great deal of things, and I think we're all in store for a very interesting discussion. Representative Na is a member of the 18th National Assembly, representing Jeonggu, Seoul, and is a spokesperson for the GNP, for the Grand National Party. She's a member of the Supreme Council of the GNP and chairperson of the 2013 Special Olympics World Winter Games Organizing Committee. During Korea's 17th presidential election, Representative Na was a spokesperson for the National Election Commission of then-presidential candidate Lee Myung-bak of the Grand National Party. She has also been selected by the regular session of the National Assembly as a distinguished politician. Prior to joining the National Assembly, she served as a judge in Busan District Court, Incheon District Court, and Seoul Administrative Court. She earned her bachelor's degree and law degree at Seoul National University, which is, of course, the Georgetown of Korea. we feel this is truly an honor to have her here, and we look forward to your remarks.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. It is my great pleasure and honor to be invited to give a speech at the CSIS and KEI. I would like to my gratitude to the organizers of this talk, Professor Victor Cha and Dr. Abraham Kim. Let me take the opportunity to express thanks to the CSIS and KEI for doing a wonderful job of helping more people understand and appreciate the importance of Korean-US alliance. The title of today's talk is Post-G20 Seoul Summit, Current Issues in Northeast Asia and South Korea's role. We Koreans are proud that as the host nation of this year's G20 summit meeting, South Korea played a successful bridging role. However, due to the recent situation on the Korean Peninsula, we cannot afford to dwell upon the meaning of this success. In today's talk, I would like to focus on the significance of the Korean-U.S. alliance in the particularly changing security environment in East Asia. As we all know, this year marks the 60th anniversary of the outbreak of the Korean War. On arrival in Washington, D.C. yesterday, I paid a visit to Korean War Veteran Memorial. Born in the early 1960s, I do not have first-hand experience of the war. However, I could fully understand the meaning of the war through the silence of the 19 soldiers standing in full combat gear. I was particularly struck by the black granite bearing the inscription "Dead 54,246." It signifies the number of America's sons and daughters who lost their lives defending a country they never knew and a people they never met. We young Koreans who are enjoying the greatest freedom and prosperity in Korean history owe a debt of profound gratitude to these American heroes. That the Korean War is not fully terminated despite the 1953 armistice agreement was made painfully clear by the barbaric attack of North Korea on Yongpyeong Island last week. It is no secret that South-North Korean relations have been highly tense. It was amply demonstrated by the neighbors' skirmishes in 1999 and 2002, and the sinking of the South Korean ship Cheonan by a North Korean torpedo in March this year. However, last week's aggression was the first of its kind, in that it was directed even civilian targets on South Korea territory, resulting in 4 deaths, including 2 civilians. It is for this reason that South Koreans take the attack as a very serious provocation. It is often said that the only thing predictable about the North Korean regime is that it is extremely unpredictable. As regards to the motives for the brutal attack, a couple of explanations have been offered. The shelling was part of a series of premeditated provocations, including the announcement of uranium enrichment program. The provocations are designed to focus the U.S. and its allies from their policy of strategic patience to the negotiating table. There is also substantial evidence that the provocations was meant to bolster the credential of Kim Jong-un. Whatever the motives, the armed attack leaves no doubt about how far the regime will go to secure the survival of the ruling family and clique. Confronted with the cowardly attack, the South Korean people are reaching the limit of their patience and asking for a stern response to North Korea. Only a resolute and determined policy coordinated with our closest allies is the answer. In that light, The Korean-U.S. combined naval exercise on the western coast of the Korean Peninsula carries a critical importance. It sends a very strong message to North Korea that no further provocation will be tolerated. Let me emphasize this point again. We can prevent future provocations only by making North Korea realize that it will have more to lose than to gain by such provocation. In this context, one can never stress too much the importance of strengthening the Korean-U.S. alliance that has been and still is the cornerstone of peace and stability and on the peninsula. The Yeongpyeong Island incident highlights the policy dilemmas concerning North Korea. First of all, North Korea has turned to its well-known tactic of attention-seeking brinkmanship. A recent New York Times article mentioned the need to break the cycle of rewarding North Korea's bad behavior with talks, inducement, and rewards. There are some people in South Korea and abroad who believe that the only way to preserve peace and security in Korea is by caving into North Korea's irrational and exorbitant demands. They blame the current South Korean government for not having continued the so-called Sunshine Policy. They argued that if the North had been offered security guarantee by the U.S., it would not have pursued its policy of confrontation, including its nuclear weapon programs. I'm stunned by the simplicity and naivety of such arguments. I would like to urge them to think hard about the true meaning of security. Does it mean the mere absence of military threat from outside? Can a regime that puts the safety and security of the ruling family above everything else, including the welfare of its population, be really secure as long as there is no threat from outside? Let me state it clearly. North Korea is not an innocent victim of international political circumstances, such as the sudden collapse of the former Soviet Union, which could redeem itself if the alleged extent threat disappeared. The genuine source of its insecurity lies at home. The insecurity of the North can be traced down to the unmistakable fact that the regime is structured in such a way that it can only survive by ruthlessly suppressing its people. Until and unless the North discards the anachronistic and staunchly Stalinist dictatorship, North Korea will remain a regime in permanent crisis. In other words, a failed state par excellence. And as long as North Korea remains a proto-Stalinist regime, it will be in constant need of creating external threats to secure the safety of the regime, not the safety of the North Korean people. It is in this connection that I would like to talk about China's North Korea policy. Many Koreans were dismayed by the Chinese government's response to the Cheonan incident last spring. China was suspected of condoning a serious violation of the UN Charter by North Korea, as long as the North remains a useful buffer state. Regrettably, this suspicion was confirmed this past week. Despite clear evidence, the Chinese government has not criticized North Korea for its flagrant violation of the 1953 Armistice Agreement and the relevant provisions of the UN Charter. Let us think about the following question together. Is China's security guaranteed as long as North Korea is interposed between China's borders and the U.S. military presence in South Korea, even though the North remains an extremely serious human security problem? In providing uncritical support to the North Korean regime, is China not mistaking a ticking time bomb for a security buffer? In resolving the North Korean problem, which is much larger than just the North Korean nuclear program, it is imperative that China play a constructive role as a responsible power looking beyond its narrow national interests. Given China's crucial role in East Asia, we also need to articulate the framework within which to cooperate closely with China for the resolution of the North Korean problem and other pressing issues of the region. Let me talk a little bit more about China, in particular, the question of how the Korea-U.S. alliance connects with the Korea-China relations. The security and diplomatic landscape of East Asia has been changing in a rapid and fundamental way. China is not just rising, but has already risen. Against such a backdrop, it is not surprising that some Koreans feel a magnetic attraction to China, in particular, the Chinese market. Let me give you an idea using statistical information. In 1992, when South Korea established diplomatic ties with Beijing, the amount of bilateral trade stood at about $6.4 billion. Last year, it was $141 billion, which means that the bilateral trade has expanded 22 times over the past 18 years. This amount is larger than the U.S. and Japan put together. China's attraction of some Koreans can be explained in various ways: historical, economic, strategic, and so on. Under the circumstances, it is undeniable that some Koreans heed the siren call of adopting an equidistant or balancing policy between America and China. However, in my view, a greater part of the Korean society considers that the Korea-U.S. relationship is qualitatively different from that between Korea and China. The former is an alliance founded on common values and worldviews, while with respect to the latter, there is a still long way to go to fully realize the strategic cooperative partnership. It is crystal clear that the Korea-U.S. alliance will remain the constant bedrock of Korea's foreign policy. At the same time, we welcome open discussions and close collaboration on all issues of mutual interest with China, a close economic partner and immediate neighbor of Korea. This does not mean that the Korea-U.S. alliance will and should remain frozen in the present form. A good alliance is like a good marriage. It is inevitable that alliances and marriages will evolve with the change of the times. For alliances to be viable on a long-term basis, they should have a built-in capability to accommodate changes in the environment and become more mature and effective. The Korea-U.S. alliance, which has made a singular contribution not only to the peace and security on the Korean Peninsula, but also to the economic development and democratic progress of Korea, now faces a similar challenge. In that connection, I'm pleased to note that the joint vision for the alliance was adopted by our two presidents in June 2009. It aims to build on the success of the Korea-U.S. alliance in the field of security and develop it into an alliance for universal values such as human rights and democracy. I have already mentioned the true meaning of security. The joint vision clearly shows that one of the most successful and exemplar alliances, that is, the Korean-U.S. alliance, should be much more than about military security on the Korean Peninsula. It should expand its horizon to the concept of fundamental importance in this post-Cold War era, that is, human security. And human security, not limited to the Korean Peninsula, but also in East Asia and beyond. In keeping with the spirit of the times, the joint vision declares that the two governments and citizens will work closely to address the global challenges of terrorism, proliferation of weapons of mass destruction, piracy, organized crime and narcotics, climate change, poverty, infringement on human rights, energy security, and epidemic disease. Successful transformation of the Korea-U.S. alliance will be a long-term process, also requiring substantial resources and domestic consensus. Collective wisdom and patience of our two leaderships and peoples are in order. While speaking of the joint vision, let me direct your attention to the fact that the document specifically mentions the Korea-U.S. Free Trade Agreement. Today, the Free Trade Agreement is now going on. It says that the agreement could further strengthen our strong bilateral economic, trade, the investment ties. I'd like to stress that the Korea-U.S. FTA is not just about economic, trade, and investment relations between our two countries. It is not an exaggeration to regard it as the most important bilateral agreement since the Mutual Defense Treaty of 1953, tantamount to a treaty of economic alliance. The current Korean government and its predecessor have paid huge political costs for the agreement, firmly convinced of its intrinsic value. It would be a mistake of historical proportions to let all efforts and costs go down the drain because of a few disagreements over some business interests. It is high time that the leaders and peoples of our two countries take a new look at the true meaning of our alliance and the agreement, and make their best effort to bring the negotiations to a successful conclusion. Before closing my brief talk, let me share with you a bit of my personal experience. As a Korean baby boomer, I entered Seoul National University, like Georgetown, in 1982, when student activism and anti-American feelings were at their peak. Around that time, a revisionist interpretation of the Korea-U.S. relations and the Korean War was all the rage on Korean campuses. For the past 28 years, the relations have experienced substantial ups and downs, to put it mildly. It is clear at the end of the day, however, that the Korea-U.S. alliance has been a remarkable success story. Its proof lies in the fact that many Koreans have internalized the values represented by the alliance, that is, human rights and democracy, and are willing to disseminate its experience to other societies, as was shown in the recent G20 Seoul Summit. I'm very proud to be a member of a society that has brilliantly achieved both a spectacular economic development and a genuine democratization in such a short span of time. I'm also immediately grateful to you Americans for your unwavering support and assistance that was indispensable for our success. The best way for us to repay your invaluable help and friendship is to carry the torch of freedom and democracy you firmly held up during our toughest times and have its light reach the coldest and darkest corners of the Korean peninsula and beyond. It remains our mutual duty and responsibility to walk towards this common goal. Thank you very much for your attention.
Now we will move to our Q&A session. Representative Nod will be sitting at the table. Just a few house rules regarding question and answer. If you can just raise your hands, I will identify you, and if you can stand and give your name, affiliation, and your brief question, please, okay? So we will get started. Yes, please. And we also have mics, so please wait for the mic to come to you.
Okay. All right, thank you. Thank you for your remarks. My name is Jim Berger with Washington Trade Daily. I'm particularly interested in your remarks about the importance of the free trade agreement and the importance of concluding them. If for some reason it can't be concluded for no whatever reason, do you see this weakening the alliance or just a minor problem?
네, 감사합니다. 저 좋은 말씀 잘 들었고요. 워싱턴 트레이드 데일리의 짐입니다. FTA 관련돼서 FTA 중요성을 말씀하셨는데 한미 동맹에 있어서 매우 중요하다고 말씀하셨는데 혹시라도 이것이 저희들이 체결이 되지 않는다면 통과가 되지 않는다면 그것이 한미 동맹을 약화시키는 그런 효과를 가져올까요?
그 FTA가 체결이 안 된다고 해서 한미 동맹을 약화시킨다 이렇게 바로 말할 수는 없을 것입니다. 그러나 그 FTA라는 것은 이제 단순한 경제적인 문제를 넘어선 거라고 생각을 합니다. 이것은 아마 한미 동맹에 있어서 굉장히 중요한 의미를 가진다고 생각을 합니다. 그런 의미에서 저는 이 한미 FTA의 체결에 대해서 그 양국 모두 사소한 이익에 집착하지 말고 이제 큰 틀에서 봐야 되지 않는가 이렇게 생각을 합니다.
Well, if by any chance the FDA is not concluded, I don't think we can say directly that it would impact the Korea-U.S. alliance or weaken it, because the FDA is, I think, well, it goes beyond economy, and I think it holds very much a lot of meaning to the Korea-U.S. alliance. And if it were to be concluded, I think, well, in order to be concluded, I think that our both two countries, we should go beyond looking at interests of who benefits more, and that we should look at this from a bigger picture.
미국 내에서도 FTA에 관련된 그 비준동의 통과와 관련해서 굉장히 정치적인 부담을 가지고 있다 이런 말씀들을 많이 하시지만 사실 한국에서는 이미 협상이 완료된 것을 다시 논의하는 것에 관련해서부터 또 이번 이 FTA 논의가 실질적으로 연평도 포격 사건 이후에 한미 연합훈련 시기에 이루어지는 것 등 이 두 가지 점에 비추어서 굉장히 한국 내에서도 이것을 통과시키는 데 있어서 정치적 부담이 큽니다. 그러나 그럼에도 불구하고 저는 양국 모두 이 부분에 대해서 노력하고 그리고 나온 협상의 결과를 최대한 빠른 시간 안에 양국에서 양국 의회에서 비준 동의가 체결되도록 노력해야 된다고 생각합니다.
And I understand that within the U.S. ratifying this free trade agreement is a political burden to the congressman, but it is also the same for Korea, because for us we have believed that we had already completed with the negotiations, but we are now having to go back to that and having to discuss again what we believed had already been completed, and so that is also a political burden for us, and in particular that with the recent Yeonpyeongdo incident and also the Korea-U.S. combined naval exercises in the Western Sea, all of this are acting as a political burden for the Korean National Assembly to ratify the FTA as well. But nevertheless, I think that we should work together to have a more positive outcome regarding the FTA, and that both sides should work harder so that it can be ratified as soon as possible.
Maybe more burden for Korea.
A greater burden for Korea.
Next question.
Yes, please.
Thank you. Mike Billington with Executive Intelligence Review. As we all know, the banking systems in Europe and the United States are in a horrendous breakdown crisis, and I'm wondering how you think that will affect economic relations between the U.S. and Korea and all of Asia, and what recommendations you may have to the United States. I know that at the G20, the U.S. policy of quantitative easing was broadly rejected, and I wonder if you want to comment.
Executive Intelligence Review의 마이크 빌링입니다. 유럽의 금융제도의 위기가 보고 있습니다. 붕괴 위기라고까지 하는 분들도 계시는데 이것과 관련되어서 한국과 미국의 금융제도 그 부분에 있어서 어떠한 어려움들이 있다고 생각하시는지 또한 유럽의 금융제도가 위기를 맞으면서 아시아에도 금융제도가 어떠한 위기가 닥칠 수 있는지 그런 부분에 대해서 말씀을 해주시고 또한 추가적으로 G20에 있어서 저희들이 미국의 양적 완화 조치가 큰 어려움을 맞았습니다. 그 부분에 대해서 많은 비난이 있었는데 미국에 어떠한 조언이 있으시다면 좋은 말씀해 주시기 바랍니다.
이 뭐 굉장히 경제에는 정답이 없다고 합니다. 사실 이 금융위기에 관해서는 여러 가지 분석들이 많이 있지만 사실 정답이 없다고 말씀을 드리고요. 실질적으로 지금 이제는 이 그 G20 중심으로 이런 어떤 모든 금융 질서라든지 세계 경제 질서를 논의하는 것에는 한계가 있다고 생각을 합니다. 그래서 G20 정상회의에서 우리 대한민국에서 꺼낸 의제 중에 하나가 개발의 의제인데요. 실질적으로 이제는 단순한 금융 질서의 문제를 넘어선 선진국과 개도국이 함께 이 발전할 수 있는 그런 새로운 프레임워크를 만드는 것이 중요하다고 생각을 합니다.
Well, in regards to economy, I think there is no, no fixed solution. There's no one solution to solve any economic problem. Of course, there are many analysts writing about how to overcome the financial crisis, but there is no answer, I think. And to tell the truth, all discussions regarding financial orders, the order of the economy of the world, that is going on based on the G20, I think there is a limit to what can be done through that forum. And one of the agenda of the G20 Seoul Summit was the development agenda. And I think that is very important because we should now, I think, develop a new framework in which the developing and the developed countries can move forward together. And that now we have to look beyond discussing about financial orders and to find a way for both developing and developed nations to develop together.
Next question, please.
Thank you very much. My name is Peter Kang. I'm with the Korean Freedom Alliance. 한국말로 통역하시기가 불편할까 봐 한미 자유연맹이라는 것입니다. 보수 단체이고 our organization, I will speak in English maybe. We have an expert translator who can do that, the rest of it. Korean Freedom Alliance is an organization that works for freedom and democracy in the Korean Peninsula and security issues. My question regards about the Yeonpyeongdo incident. In previous provocations, South Korean government has always said that this time we will be patient. Next time we will punish you. I think the rationale was that if we retaliate, then there might be all-out war, which North Korea is threatening all the time. So this time, Lee Myung-bak government promised that we will do multiple times of retaliation. But how do you expect, do you really expect that Lee Myung-bak government will do it this time? In light of the danger of all-out war, which he wants to prevent at the same time? And if you are not sure, do you have any suggestion that you want to recommend to President Lee about how to handle the future provocation? Or how will you do it?
네, 저 한미자유연맹 Korean Freedom Alliance의 피터 강입니다. 저희 한미자유연맹은 한반도의 민주화 안보를 위하여서 노력하는 사람들의 모임입니다. 도발과 관련되어서 북한이 도발이 있을 때마다 대한민국은 언제나 이번에는 인내하지만 다음번에는 꼭 응징을 하겠다라고 발표를 하곤 하였습니다. 근본에도 역시 그런 것을 보여주고 있는데요. 보복을 하게 되면 전면전으로 갈 수 있는 위협이 있기 때문에 언제나 인내하는 그런 모습을 대한민국은 보여줬습니다. 대한민국의 이명박 대통령께서는 근본의 발표 담화를 통하셔서 앞으로는 절대적으로 수배에 응징을 가겠다라고 공언을 하셨습니다. 그럼에도 불구하고 그분은 전면전은 원하지 않는다고 하는 것을 우리는 알고 있는데 그렇기 때문에 이분이 공언하신 그런 부분에 대해서 수배의 응징이 과연 실질적으로 이루어질 수가 있는 것인지 그런 가능성이 있는 것인지 또한 의원님께서는 이명박 대통령에게 어떤 건의를 하고 싶으시다면 이 부분에 있어서 어떠한 건의를 하시겠습니까?
지금 대한민국 굉장히 중요한 시기라고 생각을 합니다. 사실 저는 이제 연평도 사건이 나고 나서 조문을 갔었는데요. 상당히 정말 정치인으로서 죄송하다는 그런 이야기밖에 할 수 없었습니다. 실질적으로 그동안 한국은 아마 그 허구의 평화, 평화라는 이름으로 가장된 그런 허구의 평화 속에서 안심하고 있었던 것으로 알고 있습니다. 이제 저는 튼튼한 안보만이, 튼튼한 준비만이 결국 도발을 막을 수 있다고 생각을 하고 이러한 부분에 대해서 정부도 같은 입장이라고 생각을 합니다. 결국 로마 시대에 평화를 얻으려면 전쟁을 준비하라는 이야기가 있습니다. 우리가 이제는 튼튼한 안보와 그리고 단호한 대응만이 또 다른 도발을 막을 수 있다는 그런 인식하에서 이제는 대응해야 된다고 생각을 합니다. 그동안 북한은 도발의 수위와 도발의 태양도 바꿔오고 수위도 달라졌습니다. 이번만큼은 다릅니다. 그동안의 도발과 다르게 제가 아까 강연에서도 이야기했지만 민간인에 대한 도발을 했습니다. 이것은 민간인에 대한 도발이 또 의도된 도발이라는 것도 다 판명이 되었습니다. 그래서 앞으로 정부의 입장도 그렇다고 생각을 하고 이제는 그 단호한 그 대응을 확실히 만들어낼 것이라는 말씀을 드립니다.
Well, the Republic of Korea is in a very critical moment these days. And after the Yeonpyeongdo incident, I had a chance to meet with the residents on the island, and I had nothing to say to them except that I was sorry, that we were sorry as politicians for not having been able to protect them. I think until now, the Koreans have believed there was peace on the peninsula. It was a mythical peace, not a true peace, and that we had made ourselves believe it and that we were happy in the world. But now everything has changed, and we believe that reinforced security will help to prevent further provocations by North Korea. And I think this is something that the Korean government also agrees on. There is a Roman saying that if you want peace, then you have to prepare for war. And that is why I believe a stronger security and more harsher response to any provocations will prevent further provocations like that. North Korea has attacked South Korea various times in the past, and of course in varying levels. But what makes this time more different is that it targeted civilians, and that it has been proved that it was intentional. And so I think together with the Korean government, of course, that we will definitely respond stronger if North Korea provocates once more.
This time is really, really different.
Please, right there, gentleman, red shirt, and then.
Hwang Do-hyun from Yonhap News Agency. Many South Korean media reports say that you are one of the strong presidential candidates for the GNP in 2012. So what do you think about it? And what is your opinion about South Korea having a female president? Also, which country do you think will be the first to have a female president between South Korea and the United States? Thank you.
연합 뉴스입니다. 2012년에 가장 강력한 한나라당 후보로서 의원님이 지목되고 있는데 그 부분에 대해서 어떠한 생각을 하시는지 고견을 듣고 싶고요. 두 번째는 대한민국에 과연 여자 대통령이 나올 것이라고 생각하시는지 그 점에 대해서는 또 여성 대통령에 대해서 어떻게 생각하시는지 세 번째는 미국과 한국 중에서 둘 중에 어느 나라가 먼저 여성 대통령을 낼 것인지
조금 전에 말씀하실 때 그 미디어가 이야기한다고 했기 때문에 저는 잘 모르겠습니다. 미디어가 이야기한다고 하니까요. 최근에 그 한국에서는 대물이라는 그 드라마가 유행입니다. 그 거기서는 여성 대통령에 관한 이야기, 그러니까 한 그 아나운서 출신의 여성이 대통령이 되어가는 과정을 드라마한 건데요. 아마 그러한 드라마가 나온 것이 아마 한국에서의 여성 대통령의 출연 가능성을 좀 더 높게 보고 또 높여주는 부분이 있지 않나 이런 생각을 합니다. 최근에 그 여성 유력주자의 그 여론조사가 이렇게 좀 더 올라갔다고 하는데요. 그것이 바로 이런 대물의 영향도 상당히 있지 않은가 이렇게 생각을 합니다. 한국과 미국, 글쎄요, 뭐 한번 내기를 여기서 걸어볼까요? 저는 사실 지난 미국 대선을 굉장히 흥미롭게 보았습니다. 실질적으로 성별의 차별을 먼저 깰 것이냐, 인종의 차별을 먼저 깰 것이냐 이렇게 해서 흥미롭게 봤는데 성별의 벽이 더 높다는 것을 실감했습니다. 아마 미국도 곧 여성 대통령이 나오지 않을까, 또 한국도 마찬가지로 앞서거니 뒤서거니 따라가지 않을까 이렇게 기대해 봅니다.
These days in Korea there is a very popular soap opera drama on TV and it's called Daemul and it is about a story of a woman who used to be a news announcer, a news reporter, who later becomes the president of South Korea. And I think this TV series is making people aware that now perhaps is the time for Korea to have a female president. And I think, it is very influential because recently there was a poll, and in that poll, a lot of people said that Korea was now becoming more ready to have a woman president. So I think maybe, of course, it may be the influence of the TV series, but there is a lot of discussions in Korea regarding that possibility. And regarding your third question on whether would it be Korea or the U.S. that has a female president first, maybe we can make a bet, I don't know. Actually, I was very interested in the presidential elections in the U.S. and the recent one, and I wanted to see whether the U.S. would break the discrimination wall between gender or the one between race first. And of course, it was the race discrimination that you overcome first. And so maybe the wall between the gender was much higher and a more difficult task. But I think that U.S. will soon have a female president, and maybe Korea as well. So we'll just have to wait and see.
For me, only media says so. I don't know.
Thank you. Only the media believes that I am the next presidential candidate. So I'm not sure about what other people think.
Thank you, Ki Hong Sung, Yeonhap News from South Korea. I'd like to ask how to deal with Chinese law on North Korea problem. You have mentioned in keynote speech, we need to make a framework to cooperate with China for the resolution of North Korean problem and the other pressing issues of the region. Many people think that North Korea and China alliance have a confrontation with Korea and U.S. alliance in the Northeast Asia security dynamics. My question is, how can Korea make the framework to cooperate with China as keep remaining Korea-U.S. alliance? Thank you.
연합뉴스의 장기홍입니다. 중국의 역할에 대해서 그 연설 도중에 의원님께서 거론을 하셨는데요. 중국의 역할에 있어서 공조의 틀, 대한민국과 중국의 공조의 틀이 필요하다는 언급이 있으셨던 것 같습니다. 지금 현재 동북아시아의 구도를 보면요. 미국과 한국의 동맹, 그리고 그 반대편에는 북한과 중국의 동맹이 있는 그러한 대결 구도의 안보 다이내믹이 있다고 보여지는데요. 그런 경우에 중국과 한국이 어떻게 공조의 틀을 만들 수가 있는 것인지, 또 공조의 틀이 형성이 된다면 그것은 한미 동맹에 어떠한 영향을 끼칠 수가 있는 것인지 말씀해 주시기 바랍니다.
그 실질적으로 그 북한 문제를 해결하는 데 있어서 가장 그 핵심적인 역할을 하는 것은 중국이라고 생각을 합니다. 중국은 그동안 북한과 사실 혈맹의 관계를 가지고 있습니다. 최근에 또 수교 60주년을 맞아서 굉장히 활발한 교류를 하고 있는 것으로 알고 있습니다. 마오쩌둥의 아들 마오아닝 동상 제막식에는 원자바오 총리가 방문하기도 했는데요. 실질적으로 이러한 중국의 이런 그 북한과 중국의 혈맹 관계, 그것으로 인해서 북한의 무력 도발에 대한 이런 무력 도발이라는 불법 행위에 대해서 용인하는 중국에 대해서 이제는 새로운 그런 우리가 제안을 해야 될 때라고 생각을 합니다. 끊어서 얘기할게요.
Regarding the North Korean issue, I think that China can play a crucial role in resolving that. Currently China has a sort of a blood brother relationship with North Korea. They have very very close relationship, and recently they are celebrating the 60th anniversary of diplomatic ties between the two countries, and they are very much interacting together. And recently, I think, I also understand that when the North Korea, they were setting up a statue of Mao's son, Mao Anning, that one Prime Minister Won Jae-bao visited North Korea for the ceremony. So they have a very active relationship. But China has continued to ignore and turn a blind eye to the illegal acts, the provocations that of North Korea until now. And I think that it is time that we encourage or induce China to take a different approach regarding North Korea.
중국이 이 북한에 대해서 이러한 태도를 취하는 것은 북한이 한마디로 버퍼 스테이트의 역할을 할 수 있다고 생각을 하기 때문인데요. 이러한 부분을 좀 생각을 바꾸기 위해서는 첫 번째로는 이렇게 북한이 끊임없는 도발을 하는 경우에 결국 중국도 곤란해진다. 사실 국제사회에서 중국만이 이 북한에 대한 이런 불법을 용인하는 것은 결국 중국이 국제사회의 책임 있는 지도자 국가로서 인정받을 수 없다는 것을 알려줘야 된다고 생각을 하고요. 두 번째로는 한국이 통일되었을 때 중국은 북한이 없어짐으로 인한 주변 그 자신의 안정이 위협받지 않을까 이러한 부분에 대해서 굉장히 걱정하는 것으로 생각됩니다. 그래서 이러한 부분의 우려를 불식시킬 수 있기 위해서 한국이 중국과 이러한 문제에 대해서 통일된 이후에 그 한국과 중국의 관계에 대해서 터놓고 이야기해야 된다고 생각을 합니다. 다만 저는 이러한 문제가 그 가치와 이념을 공유하고 있는 한미동맹의 근간을 흔드는 것은 아니어야 되고 또 그런 것을 흔들지 않는 기초 위에서 이루어져야 된다고 생각을 합니다.
And in particular, China is supporting North Korea because I think it believes that North Korea can act as a buffer state between China and other countries, in particular Korea and the U.S. But I think it is important to change the way China sees North Korea and to make it realize that if it continues to turn a blind eye on North Korea's illegal actions, that it will not be recognized as a responsible leader in the international society, and that they should realize that they have more to lose than to gain if they continue to support North Korea. And another concern that I think China has is what will happen after the two Koreas are reunified, because then China will no longer have a buffer state to protect itself from other countries, and that it will have a threat, it will feel threatened about its stability. And so I think it's important to make China realize that that will not happen, and that they will be comforted that their security is safe even after the two Koreas are reunified. And I think on this issue that the two countries must conduct very frank discussions in the very near future. But of course, this should not affect in any way the Korea-U.S. relations, because Korea and U.S., we have very common values and we share common ideologies. So all of this talk with China would have to be in the extent that it does not affect the Korea-U.S. relations.
택진 헌, British American Security Information Council. There has been increasing skepticism that North Korea would not and will not give up their nuclear weapon, no matter what. And the more strong messages we give them, it seems like North Korea would hold on this nuclear weapon for their own security. You rejected Sunshine Policy, and it has been proven that Sunshine Policy cannot bring qualitative change of North Korean regime or the nuclear security as a whole in the region. So are we ready to accept nuclear North Korea at this time? Are we ready to contain it and not to proliferate nuclear weapon anymore, and it would be okay? If not, what would be your wisdom to tackle this problem?
한백진입니다. 북한과 관련되어서 북한은 그들의 핵무기를 절대로 포기하지 않을 것처럼 보이는 것 같습니다. 그리고 절대로 포기하지 않겠다고 하는 그런 발언도 있었던 것 같습니다. 그렇기 때문에 대한민국은 예전에 햇볕 정책을 통하여서 어떻게든 이 무기 포괴물 없애려고 노력하였지만 그것은 실패했다라고 저는 생각하고 있습니다. 그렇기 때문에 현 상황 하에서 대한민국은 이러한 핵을 보유하고 있는 핵 국가로서 북한을 용인할 그러한 준비는 되었는지 다만 그들을 통제할 수 있다면 그 공세하여서 그것이 추가적으로 다른 곳으로 흘러가지 않도록 하는 것에 만족할 것인지 그것이 대한민국의 입장인지 의원님께서는 어떻게 생각하시는지
그 이 핵을 북한이 핵을 가지고 있는 것을 저희는 절대 용인할 수 없다는 입장에서는 변함이 없습니다. 그건 뭐 저희 정부의 입장이기도 하고 그거는 제 개인적인 견해도 마찬가지입니다. 절대 이러한 부분에 대해서는 저희가 그동안에 해왔던 것처럼 북이 핵을 포기할 수 있도록 여러 가지 수단을 다 써야 된다고 생각을 합니다. 지금까지 북한이 우리가 뭐 유엔에서의 제재라든지 국제적인 여러 가지 조치를 했음에도 불구하고 핵을 포기하지 않고 계속해서 개발할 수 있었던 문제는 그 핵심은 역시 중국이라고 생각을 합니다. 중국이 그동안 소위 그 북한 정권이 연명할 수 있도록 도와주었다는 점을 누구도 부인하지 않을 것입니다. 결국 그런 의미에서 중국과의 어떤 그 외교적인 노력 그리고 중국이 입장을 선회할 수 있도록 하는 아까 말씀드린 것 같은 그 한국이 중국과 굉장히 그 열어놓고 논의하는 부분이 중요하다고 생각을 하고요. 또 한 가지는 저는 중국을 통한 이제 중국이 더 이상 북한을 돕지 않음으로써 대북 제재가 확실하게 효과를 발휘하게 하는 것이 중요하다고 생각을 하고 또 한 가지는 결국 북한 내의 변화를 이끌어내는 거라고 생각을 합니다. 그렇기 때문에 저는 북한 인권 문제에 대해서 우리가 좀 더 관심을 가져야 된다. 결국 북한 인권 문제를 강조하는 것은 북한의 개방과도 전 밀접한 관련이 있고 그것이 결국 북이 핵을 단념하는 데 있어서도 관련이 있다고 생각을 합니다.
Well, to be straightforward, we will never tolerate a nuclear state, North Korea as a nuclear state, and I think this is not only the vision of the view of the government, but also my personal view. That we will never accept North Korea as a nuclear state and that we cannot tolerate it. And although we have tried through many ways to make North Korea abandon its nuclear program, we have not been successful. And I think that was possible just because North Korea had the support of China. And again, I mentioned that China is a country that is helping North Korea's regime to survive, and I think nobody can deny this. And therefore, as I mentioned earlier, I think it is important to make China take a different approach on North Korea. And in regards to that, we need to have frank discussions with China. And another thing is that if we can stop China helping North Korea, then we will be able to more effectively sanction North Korea, and that will also help North Korea abandon its nuclear programs. And another way would be to make North Korea change itself, you know, to help North Korea transform. For example, by emphasizing the North Korean human rights issues, if we can help North Korea to solve this problem, I think this could also lead to North Korea's abandonment of the nuclear weapons.
Steve Chang from Korean American Sharing Movement. Thank you for your speech and all the timely messages you delivered. And also as part of the Korean American community in this area, we are very proud of your being a role model as a national leader and as a judge, and also a parent of a physically handicapped child. The alliance of two democracies on, and also resulting security, national security, cannot be guaranteed without the support of the popular sentiment. Sometimes there was a very serious danger of the alliance between Korea and U.S. because of the misjudgment of the popular sentiment of each country. And the radical major shift of the popular sentiment also is caused by the major incident, such as 9/11 or attack on the Pearl Harbor or sinking of a ship. Looking back the past major serious incidents, Cheonanham and Yeonpyeong Island, what is your assessment of what is going to be the outcome or change out of this Yeonpyeong incident and Cheonanham incident in the change of the Korean popular sentiment? And is it going to be a long-lasting or short-living? Thank you.
Steve Chang, 장세규입니다. 메시지가 시의적절하고 아주 좋은 말씀이었다고 생각을 하고 있습니다. 저희들은 미국에 살면서 교포들이 의원님을 매우 존경하고 있습니다. 특히 좋은 롤 모델이라고 생각하고 있는데 훌륭한 판사로서 또한 장애아의 어머니로서 저희들에게 좋은 본보기가 되고 있습니다. 한국도 그렇고 미국도 그렇고 국민의 여론이 매우 중요한 것 같은데요. 국민 여론이라고 하는 것은 역시 어떤 큰 사건이 있을 때 많은 변화가 있는 것 같습니다. 미국의 9.11이나 아니면 진주만 폭격이었다든가 아니면 대한민국의 천안함 사건이라든가 연평도 사건 등등은 국민 여론에 큰 영향을 끼친다고 저는 생각을 하고 있는데 제가 의원님께 여쭤보고 싶은 것은 과연 천안함 또 연평도 사건 사태 등을 통해서 볼 때 국민의 여론이 많이 바뀌었는지 또한 이러한 국민의 여론이 앞으로 지속적으로 바뀐 상태로 있을 것인지 아니면은 또 다시 예전으로 돌아갈 수가 있는 것인지 그 점을 여쭤보고 싶습니다.
그 연평도 사건은 폭격 사건은 뭐 저희로서 굉장히 불행한 일입니다. 그런데 이제 정말 이 뭐 그런 와중에 사실 그 천안함 사건과 달리 천안함 사건은 엄청난 국론 분열을 가져왔다면 연평도 사건은 실질적으로 안보의 중요성에 대해서 온 국민이 같이 느끼게 되었다는 점에서 굉장히 그 의미가 있다고 생각을 합니다. 그래서 지금 말씀하신 이런 한미동맹에 대한 중요성 문제라든지 안보의 중요성에 대한 국민들의 인식이 예전과 달라졌다고 생각을 하고요. 그것은 아마 결과로서 나타날 거라고 생각을 합니다. 다만 이제 걱정되는 것은 늘 이 우리가 어떠한 이슈에 있어서 거기에 대해서 순수하지 못한 의도로 접근했을 때 국민들은 금방 알 수 있다고 생각을 합니다. 우리가 천안함 사건도 결국 좀 정치적으로 어떤 쪽이 이용한다라는 느낌을 주었을 때 국민의 여론이 바뀐 것 같은 것을 안 것처럼 이 연평도 사건도 이것을 정치적인 그런 이용 연평도 사건을 정치적으로 이용해서는 안 될 거라고 생각을 합니다. 그래서 정말 이 국민이 한 마음으로 모아진 이 시기에 이것을 통해서 새로운 안보를 만들어 가야 된다고 생각을 합니다. 저는 이제 이것과 더불어서 특히 이제 한미 관계에 있어서도 상당히 그동안 이 소고기 사태나 이런 때에서 본 것처럼 이 정부 사이드에서의 그 한국과 미국의 동맹과 달리 동맹 관계와 달리 국민들에게는 아직도 우리 반미 감정이나 이러한 부분이 있는 것이 있고 또 결국 정부 간의 어떤 긴밀한 협조와 국민들 간의 그러한 생각에서는 갭이 상당히 있습니다. 그래서 앞으로 이제 FTA도 체결이 된다면 그러한 갭을 어떻게 줄여가느냐가 굉장히 중요할 거라고 생각합니다.
First of all, the Yeonpyeongdo incident is a very unfortunate incident for the Koreans. But despite that fact, if the Tiananmen incident brought on a divided opinion among the people. It was different this time because the Yeongpyeongdo incident, it made people realize that security is a very important issue and that now we share the feeling that we must have stronger borders and we have to have a stronger security. And I think that this will change the way people see the Korea-US alliance and the way people see security itself. And you will be able to see, I think, the results of this. But of course, one concern is that people will see if you have an ulterior motive on dealing with an issue, the people will see that. For example, the Tiananmen incident, people saw that there are people who wanted to use that incident in a political way. And so I think it is important for this time round, the Yeongpyeongdo incident is not used in that manner. And at a time where the Korean people are now sharing in the idea that we're now one country and that we have, I think, an opportune time to build a new security for ourselves. In regards to the U.S. and ROC alliance, as can be seen in the previous beef issue, the relationship with the Koreans and the U.S. is different on the government level and on the people level, because there is, I think, a more favorable relationship on the government level. But there is still some anti-American sentiments among the Korean people, and that I think we have to bridge that gap that exists between the government level and the people level. And perhaps after the FTA is concluded, it will be very important to see how we can go about bridging that gap.
A couple more questions, please.
Yeah, 오랜만에 뵙습니다. 한국경제신문의 김홍렬 대표입니다. 저는 한국의 의회 정치에 대해서 질문을 좀 드리겠습니다. 오늘 FTA 결과가 조만간 나올 것 같습니다. 타결이 될 것도 같습니다. 타결이 되면 가장 국내 정치적으로 우려되는 게 야당인 민주당이 극렬하게 반대를 할 것으로 예상이 됩니다. 지난번 한국에서 FTA가 외교통상위원회를 통과할 때 부끄럽지만은 굉장한 폭력이 있었습니다. 이번에도 그런 폭력이 있을 수도 있습니다. 여기에 대해서 한나라당 최고위원으로서 어떻게 설득의 정치로 민주당을 설득시켜서 평화롭게 통과시킬 것인지 말씀해 주시고요. 아니면은 정말 한나라당이 다수당으로서 다수의 힘으로서 밀어붙일지 말씀해 주시고 실제 국회 내에서 의회 폭력을 없애려면 어떻게 해야 되는지 개선책을 좀 알려주십시오.
I would like to ask a question regarding Korean internal domestic politics. I think that we will soon see a conclusion of the FTA, and there is a possibility for it to be concluded this time. And I think this will result in a very strong opposition by the opposition party of Korea, the Democratic Party, because last time when the FTA was passed at the Committee on the Foreign Affairs, there was a very violent incident, and I think it is very highly likely that there is another violent incident this time round. Then, as a member of the Supreme Council of the GNP, do you think that you can persuade the Democratic Party to accept the FTA that will be concluded this time, or will it be more violence that we will have to see this time around? And do you have an idea on how we can cure the Korean Parliament from such violent actions?
Yeah, 야당에서는 FTA 논의를 당장 중지해라 이렇게 야당의 대표가 이야기할 정도로 극렬한 반대가 예상이 됩니다. 특히 이 한미의 서해에서의 그 연합훈련과 시기에 이루어진 이 FTA에 대해서 분명히 야당은 안보와 이 나라의 경제적 이익을 바꿔먹었다 이런 식의 아마 표현을 할 것이라고 생각을 합니다. 그러나 저는 오늘 타결되는 FTA가 물론 한국에게는 과거와 좀 이미 협상이 완료된 것을 조금 더 우리에게 불리하게 고쳐지는 부분이 있기 때문에 실질적으로 아쉬움은 있지만 큰 틀에서 보면은 이 FTA 체결이 결국 안 하는 것보다는 이익이라는 부분에 대해서 국민들이 공감해 주실 거라고 생각을 하고요. 실질적으로 가장 뭐 이것을 폭력으로 통과하느냐 아니냐는 것에 가장 키는 국민의 여론이 아닌가 생각을 합니다. 꼼꼼히 따져보면 이번 건은 국민의 여론이 그렇게 여당에게나 정부에게 불리하게 되지는 않지 않을까 이런 생각을 해봅니다. 물론 아직 FTA 타결 결과가 안 나왔기 때문에 이렇게 속단하는 것은 굉장히 이르다고 속단하는 것은 문제가 있다고 생각할 수 있지만 결국 지금 논의되는 것이 소고기 문제는 저희가 안 건드리겠다 하는 것이 대통령의 입장이니만큼 결국 자동차 문제만을 갖고 논의를 한다면 우리가 어느 정도 선은 물론 미국의 요구를 다 들어줄 수는 없지만 좀 양보하는 부분에 대해서 국민들이 납득해 주지 않을까 이렇게 생각을 합니다. 그래서 그런 점에서 야당이 물론 지금은 극렬하게 반대하지만 이것이 그 논의를 통해서 국회에서 통과될 수 있다고 일단 기대를 해봅니다. 일단 첫 번째 여기까지만.
On your first question, of course, the opposition party, they are very unhappy about the FTA discussions that are going on right now, and they want to halt any such discussions. In particular, I think the leader of the opposition party will be very strongly opposed to this. And what it makes everything more difficult is because this comes at a time when we are conducting combined naval exercises in the West Sea. And they, of course, the opposition party, I think they will not miss the opportunity to say that, the Korean government, we have handed over our economic interests in return for security. I'm sure that they're going to mention that. But at a time when we had already believed that the negotiations had been completed and that we are now working with the U.S. to adjust the conditions of the agreement that may be unfavorable to South Korea, I am a little saddened by that fact. But I still think that the FTA should nevertheless be concluded, and it would be a greater benefit for both countries if it is. And I hope that the Korean people will understand that. And in regards to whether it will be another violent action on the parliamentary level, I think that will really depend on how the people see this issue. And I don't think that the people will see this as an unfavorable thing on the government or on the opposition party. Of course, we still have to wait for the results, so I can't really say anything about it, really. But the president has said that the discussions on the FTA will go on only regarding the automobile sector, and we will not touch on the beef issue. So I think, I think that we can make some concessions that the U.S. is demanding, and that the people will understand this. And of course, there will be very strong opposition from the opposition party, but that we will be, I hopefully think, able to pass this agreement on the parliamentary level through discussions peacefully.
그 위해 폭력에 대해서는 참 한국의 정치인으로서 굉장히 부끄럽습니다. 근데 사실 한국의 정치 문화는 조금 그동안 지나치게 합의 정신을 강조하는 그런 문제점이 있었던 것 같습니다. 그러니까 이 뭐 국회 관련된 법도 그렇고, 그러니까 다수결의 원칙보다는 합의의 정신을 지나치게 강조하다 보니까 합의가 되지 않을 경우에는 다수결의 원칙으로 가야 된다. 이러한 두 부분에 대해서는 무시해왔던 부분이 있습니다. 그래서 야당이 합의해주지 않고 무조건 발목 잡으면 아무것도 할 수 없는 것이 그동안 한국의 정치 현실이었고, 그래서 사실은 국회법의 개정이라든지 이러한 것을 통해서 결국 합의가 일정 부분 안 될 경우에는 다수결의 원칙이라는 민주주의의 대원칙에 따라야 된다는 것을 좀 더 강조하는 쪽으로 국회의 법도 바꾸고 문화도 좀 바꾼다면 의회 폭력을 줄일 수 있지 않을까 이렇게 생각을 합니다. 물론 가장 중요한 것은 결국 뭐 대화가 먼저이겠죠. 네.
And regards to your question about the violence in the parliament, as a Korean politician, I am a little ashamed to admit that there is violence in the Korean parliament. And I think the root cause of this is because that the political culture in Korea has emphasized the spirit of consensus too much, and rather than opting for the majority rule, it has always been the principle for both parties to agree on an issue in order for a law to be passed. And for example, if the opposition party does not agree, then nothing will be done at the parliamentary level. So I think that was what really caused all of this violence in the parliament. But I think if we can amend and revise the National Assembly Act, and if we change our culture, I think we will be able to resolve this, we'll overcome this issue, in particular if we can focus on the majority rule, which is the basic democratic principle. And of course, the most important thing would be to solve things or solve differences through dialogue.
Unfortunately, I think our time is quickly ending, and I need to bring this session to a close. I think we had a very, very rich discussion today, and please help me thank Representative Na for this informative presentation.
Thank you very much.